Welcome, everybody. My name is Melissa Campanelli. I'm editor-in-chief of Retail Online Integration and EMC, the sister publications of Target Marketing and Printing Impression Magazines, and I want to welcome you to the 2012 Integrated Marketing Virtual Conference. Right now, we're going to be listening to the session, Spotlight, Direct Mail and Packaging in a Digital World, Getting New Call to Action to Work. We have a wonderful speaker today who's going to guide us through this topic, and her name is Lois Brayfield. She's the President and Chief Creative Officer of BaseNid and Associates. The number of new marketing tactics we're being bombarded with is overwhelming, and while we're being incentivized by the USPS to use some of these, such as QR codes and personalization, are we really taking advantage of these new opportunities in our print campaigns? Are we just creating confusion and unnecessary customer touch points? Or worse yet, are we boring our audiences with follow me, like me, and see me more online messages? Don't just jump on the bandwagon, truly take advantage of these techniques. So in today's session, you're going to learn to strategically integrate your digital assets into your print campaigns, create a call to action that means something to customers and creates real action, think about prospects in a new way using print to serve up a digital close, and create customer loyalty by creating a back-end digital experience. Before we get started, let me point out a few quick tips about how to make the most of today's session. First, if you have any technical issues, troubleshoot by clicking on the widget at the bottom of the console marked with a question mark or let us know via the question and answer box. You can also use the Q&A box to submit your questions today. We'll be addressing select questions later on, but you can send them in at any time. Please make sure you turn off any pop-up blockers on your computer so that you can use all of the widgets and bells and whistles on this console. Actually, check out the Tips for Attendees widget to learn how you can customize your viewing experience today. And finally, if you leave the session at any time or would like to view it again later, don't forget that we'll be archiving the entire show today. We'll have the on-demand environment up and running for 3 months beginning on Monday, August 20th. So without further ado, please welcome Lois Brayfield. Take it away.
Melissa, thank you so much for that kind introduction. And I'm so excited to participate in this virtual conference and talk about something that's near and dear to my heart right now, and that is, of course, the call to action. I think in this new world, with all these new tactics, we have to kind of get back to basics and take a look at what specifically we're asking the customer to do. So let's just take a look. You know, what is the call to action? What is it? It's any time that you're asking the customer to do something, anything. And, you know, in the past, it was very simple. We just asked them to mail something in or to call, and it was so easy. But with the advent, of course, of online, our world has been turned upside down. And especially in our print things, it's so critical that we integrate the two and that we understand the role of print and how we need to, you know, push people online and when it's appropriate to do so. But unfortunately, even in the last year, hundreds of new opportunities have come up, new tactics, where, you know, we're just bombarding the consumer with this labyrinth of details. And, you know, when we ask them to act now, are we just creating this complex system for getting them to respond in some way? And I believe in some cases we are literally blowing the mind of the customer to the point where they don't know what to do. And this has actually been proven through some research. One in particular, the IBM Institute of Business Value said that 60 to 65% of business leaders believe that consumers follow their brands on social media sites because they want to be a part of a community. Unfortunately, the consumers disagree. Only 25 to 30% agreed with that. The number one reason that they go on social sites is to get a deal, completely opposite of what business leaders felt. But another piece of research that I think is even more critical, and we need to think about this and embrace it, is just came out recently in May through the Harvard Business Review. They surveyed 7,000 customers that said that the biggest driver of stickiness or loyalty is really about simplicity, or they call it decision simplicity. Consumers are saying, make it easier for me. Don't make it complex. Don't make me think about how I have to go about making the decision to purchase. It's so critical that we keep it simple. So really, we need to go back to the basics. Instead of just jumping on the bandwagon of the most recent tactic that's out there, let's start over and say, you know, what is our real strategy? What are we trying to get the consumer to do? So I have this little funnel here that kind of starts with what we'll call the meaningful call to action and ends with ultimately what we're trying to do is to make money, right? It's not necessarily to start a conversation or be chums with them online. It's really to make a sale. But we have to first get back to what is it we're trying to get them to do? What do we want them to do? And as an analogy, I don't know how many of you actually saw the movie Moneyball, but there was this poignant scene in the movie that just has captivated me. Moneyball, of course, is about Billy Beane, who was the former general manager of the Oakland A's. And in this movie, there's this scene where he is sitting around a conference table with a lot of scouts and recruiters. And they're all, you know, arguing about the next best player that they're going to spend money on to get. And they had a very low budget. And Billy Beane stops the conversation and says, "What are we really buying here?" And they answer a lot of different things. You know, we need a hero. We need a superstar. We need it for the brand image of the franchise, blah, blah, blah. He stops the conversation. He points to Jonas Hill, who's an analyst, and says, "What are we really buying?" And he said, "Wins." He said, "Exactly. But how do we get wins?" And the answer from the analyst was, "We get people on, we get runs. How do you get runs? You get people on base." It completely turned around the way they went about recruiting people. They recruited to get people on, people that knew how to get on base, players that got on base. And guess what? It turned their franchise around, and they began winning. So the question that we really have to ask ourselves is, what is that single activity that will get customers on first base? Not all the other noise, but what's that one thing we can do? And I want to share with you just this quick case study of a brand that learned the value of that. BSW is a business-to-business brand who markets to a specific vertical audience of broadcasters. And they realized that the one thing they could do that would increase sales was to get a quote, not necessarily ask for the sale right off the bat, but to get a quote. And again, these are broadcasters that are ordering very big ticket items. And the reason that quotes worked for them is because they were really, 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 really good at closing the deal on the phone. Their sales reps were really good at it and helping customers find out what they really, really needed. The second reason is in this audience, they have severe and vicious bid wars. And, you know, they have competitors that have salespeople that will meet with them one-on-one and bid things down. So they knew that they had to get in the game, they had to get into the quote process. And because they're a pure direct marketing company, in all of their marketing materials, they began asking for the quote in different ways. In this particular case, they're just saying, we have a low package pricing. They also, part of their brand imagery, they take advantage of these really fun vintage photos, supporting the fact that they've been around for a long time. And here they're asking for a quote in kind of a fun, different kind of a way. But again, asking for the quote. Even when they sell specific products, this particular one, taking a bit to load it here, but it's close to a $15,000 item, and then they have the list price. That's the manufacturer's suggested retail price. But they cross that and they say, call for the quote to get your lowest price possible. So, you know, they're reminding them to do this. Again, another way to ask for the quote. And even when they go online to make a purchase, the next thing they're trying to do, I'm trying to get the slide forward here, here's the home page of their website. And you can see right there in the upper right-hand corner, get a quote. And then one of their flash carousel ads, again, you know, having a little fun with it, but asking for a quote in a different way. Then when you drill down to the category level, I don't know why it repeated that one. Sorry about that. But even down to the category level, once again, get a quote. You know, they're saying place in the cart, but they're also reminding them to get a quote. and then even on the product level get a quote. So what happened, absolutely, their quotes almost doubled when they began to really push this, and therefore the sales followed. Very successful. Okay, so let's take a look at this call to action, what we're calling the call to action. And one of the most important things is once you understand how to get them on first base, what tactic is going to be the simplest and easiest way for them to learn more or get a quote or make a sale, whatever it is. And this is where hierarchy really comes into play. If the easiest way is to get them to go online, then that's what you want to press. That's what you make the biggest. That's what you make the most bold. That's the one that you push the most. And then the other things, maybe not so much. And I'm going to suggest, in fact, that maybe some of those tactics just get in the way and put up a barrier or a roadblock for them to getting on first base. So, you know, perhaps, I know it sounds like heresy, we get rid of some of those tactics. You know, it really depends on what is the simplest path for the customer. That's what you have to keep in mind. So when you're actually crafting the call to action, the actual message itself, there's several things that you want to keep in mind. Never assume that if you use code words or something like that, that they understand specifically what you're asking them to do. You know, don't be boring. Be bold with your message. And you want to appeal to their needs and defer to them rather than it's all about us, like the term follow me. You want to keep it simple, personalized if possible, because we know personalization will work. But by all means, be authentic to your brand in that same voice. You know, the call to action doesn't have to be like everyone else's. It can be authentic to your brand. And if possible, promise a solution on the other end of the activity that you're asking them to do. So here's another quick example. Relax the back. Let's see. Trying to get it to load there. Oops. Okay, sorry, it's not loading. Okay, here we go. Relax the back. A consumer, they're a retailer. They have over 100 retail stores across the country. And they know that to get customers on first base, the best thing they can do is to get the consumer in the store. So in all their print materials, they constantly talk about explore the store for more and how if they come in, they can get this free pain assessment. And then the salesperson can literally match the specific need to the actual product, and they know that they have a much better success. So everything they do is to get them in the store, get them in the store. So even in the QR code, they promise this, you know, free pain assessment, and all they have to use is the QR code to actually get them in the store. Or at the very bottom, you can see, go online to the store locator, because they know that that's so important. So I just want to share real quick a couple other call to actions, you know, that people use. This is what we usually see, where they just say, follow us online. Again, you're not deferring to the customer. And honestly, we're seeing more and more consumers unlike, you know, brands because they find the information boring or not relevant. Now, here is one that I saw that was pretty good. I'll call it the better example, where they're literally asking the brand, you know, to follow us online. Okay, that part was maybe not as good. But then they went on to say, you know, to find decorating tips and ideas and connect with other fans. Well, you know, that's pretty good. But what if they change the words around just a bit and instead, you know, suggested, you know, discover your design style. Again, deferring to the customer, find decorating ideas, entertaining tips, or find help for your next project. Offering a solution to their problem, and then say, follow us. You know, just changing a few words around can make a big difference on the back end. Here's another example. It's not coming up. Sorry. Okay, here's another example from the New Pig Company. And this is a pretty cool, here, let me back up a bit. You know, they had this new product called the Pig Grippy Mat, and they knew that if they could just get this product into the hands of the customers, they could see how powerful it worked you know, the stickiness part of it and how absorbent it was. So they had their call to action really was to pick it up. That's all they were asking them to do. And so they had this powerful question, you know, where will you stick it? And then you can see in the lower left-hand corner, you know, to get creative with it and get ideas, kind of an engagement technique. But the real call to action was down at the bottom, you know, peel away your trial sample, and underneath was an introductory offer. So to get that introductory offer, they had to get it in their hands. Again, that was their goal, just get it into the customer's hands. And it really did work. So in their case, they could have a lot of fun with it because it was part of their brand, and they knew their customers appreciated that kind of humor. But how do you know, you know, how you can talk to them? How do you know what it takes to get them on first base, and how do you know that you've created this simple environment, there's a simple technique? And there's three things that you can do that guarantees that you can get it right. And those three things are research, research, and more research. That's what you have to do. And, you know, research is so readily available, and there's no excuse why we as brands shouldn't be doing this on a regular basis. We've got now these three graphs are just kind of fun and tongue-in-cheek, but really, you can learn just about anything. And unfortunately, most brands just do research on things like, you know, demographics. What we really want to understand is the psychographics of the customer and what really motivates them. You know, what entertains them? You know, what is it that will motivate them and get them to act? One of my favorite acronyms, and I can't take credit for this, it actually Tony Shy of Zappos actually came up with it. It's called ICY. And it's a great filter to use when you're trying to find out how to communicate with your customer or asking them to do something. And the ICY stands for interesting, compelling, entertaining, and educational. And that means to the consumer, you know, to your customer, not to you, not what you think is funny, not what you think is compelling, but what your customer thinks is compelling. And again, it goes back to research. You only know these things if you've been able to research it. So I'll share another case study where a really fun one that started out, but, you know, their whole goal, their whole strategy was to sell their underwear. And two of their better sellers was their Buck Naked brand and their Free Range Cotton brand. But the real goal, if you look at the bottom, was to buy two and save. So in this mailer, if you look at it, they juxtaposed the two together, and they built this campaign where it's the great debate, and you vote. You know, you vote on which one you like best, and they did the comparison. But if you look at the bottom again, there's the strong call to action, buy two and save. That's what they're really trying to get the person to do. But they're trying to engage them by this fun contest, which was very relevant to their brand. But what was so nice is that they literally, and you don't always see this in campaigns, it was so well constructed on their website. On the home page, they presented it, and you could click through, and it took you to the voting page. And you could right there very easily vote on which one you like. And once you voted, the results came up immediately. Now, in this case, I voted for Buck Naked. I don't know if they're my favorite. I never will. I'm not going to buy them. But it won. And what was interesting about it is right next to that, you know, it said buy two and save. Now, what was kind of fascinating about this, I later went back and I was showing someone and I voted for the Free Range pair, and mysteriously it won, which, you know, I wonder if they just did that so that you felt good about your choice. But regardless, it took them to the buy two and save. It was just a brilliant, brilliant campaign. So once you've got them to that action, you know, this is so critical that you make it simple and you test and retest it. You know, if you're asking them to go online, make sure the landing page works. And it sounds stupid, but so many people mess up at this stage. And if you're asking them to go, you know, to do a mobile activity, make sure it's just flawless. And it's so important, like that Duluth Trading example, to coordinate all your efforts with the print efforts as well. Here's another example of a consumer brand that does just a great job with multiple calls to action throughout their catalog. You know, inviting the customers in, you know, if they want, they can't figure out what sheets are right for them, they give them the answer to do it. It's not just find more online, but they'll offer you comfort ratings or take a closer look, and they'll give you specific landing pages where you can find the answers to their questions. You know, these are call to actions. Another one, okay, so once you get them through this simple activity and you've made it very simple for them, and they are there, and maybe they haven't quite closed the deal yet, I say that there's a second call to action to close the deal. You know, it's all well and good if you can get 1,000 people to like you on Facebook, but what will you do then to monetize the activity, or what I call the second call to action? Let me show you an example of a brand that I thought did it very well. In this particular case, it was Honey Baked Ham, and they included a QR code for the postal discount, but they personalized my name on it. So there was a secret customer offer for Lois Brayfield, which immediately got my attention. And then they gave real simple instructions on how to use it, but they also said you can go online as well, and they didn't want to miss that opportunity. But once I got to the mobile page, what intrigued me is that the entire offer, everything about it was on one screen. I didn't have to scroll up, scroll down. It loaded very, very quickly. But the second call to action was there. The offer was $10 off, but they made it so easy for me to buy now or call now. I especially like the call now. I could literally just push that, and it populated the phone number, and I didn't even have to dial the number. And, you know, I could just push send, and it would call. So very simple process. Is there ever a case, though, where maybe you want them to act later? And I say yes, there is. Actually, you know, when we do prospecting, oftentimes we treat prospect lists as one and done. You know, we buy the list, they either respond or they don't, and if they don't, you know, we miss the opportunity. Well, this particular piece of research said that prospects, if you're able to get them to engage in a very meaningful way, they're 63% more likely to convert on the back end. So let me share with you a case study, and I've changed the name and a lot of the details because that was the only way I could present this case study. So this is a mailer that went out to all their customers to actually sell a product, but they also tried it for prospecting. And through research, and this is a financial company, and through research they were able to determine that because of some legislation, there was some specific information that customers really did want to understand that would help them, you know, make better decisions with this product. So through research, they created this guide that customers really, truly wanted, and then went about their prospecting efforts with co-op lists and overlays and presented this offer in a very prominent way on the mailer. So if they weren't ready to buy, at least they had this piece of information, and they posted on their social and their and used search methods to get to that guide as well. So people went online, got the guide. It was emailed to them, so they're able to capture the name, the email address, and a zip code. And through a series of triggered emails, they were able to give them geo-specific offers, and here's the cool thing. So they got about originally just less than 1% of a response, but through this system, they were able to get an additional 1.8% of those prospects to raise their hand, and eventually through the triggered program, convert 27%. It was a huge thing for them. So the last thing, of course, is, you know, once you've monetized it, you can always do better. I believe that every program should be tweaked and constantly researched and retested. So test until you've figured out, you know, exactly how to get them on first base and create a meaningful call to action. And, you know, just be careful with all these different tactics out there that you're not complicating the consumer and keeping her up at night, but instead simplifying the process and delivering this, you know, something that he or she truly cares about. So that's, I think I'm finishing right on time. I know, Melissa, you are going to open it up for questions.
Hello?
Hi, yes, thank you so much, Lois. That was great.
Yes.
It is time for some questions. So I really would love, as I mentioned earlier, we'd love questions. So anything that you guys want to ask Lois, she's here. But in the meantime, I have some questions for you, Lois.
Okay.
One thing that I'm really interested in that we sort of mentioned briefly was you know, QR codes and some. Can you talk a little bit about QR codes in general, how they are, some good uses of them and bad uses? I don't know if you've seen any examples or if anything that you could share with us.
Absolutely. I think there's a lot of abuse out there with QR codes.
Yeah.
Of course, everybody rushed to get them on their printed pieces because they got a discount. And, you know, the post office has now, you know, put some constraints around that, and rightly so, because we want these to work. And, you know, even the ones that I think, you know, the good uses, again, are where you're getting them very good, relevant information that they want, like how to do something. One of my favorite QR codes, too, is, and I didn't get to it because of the time, but packaging. Mm-hmm. You know, when somebody receives, like, a consumer packaged good or something in the mail and it's time to reorder, why not include a QR code right there on the packaging where they can scan it and make it a real simple, you know, method to reorder it? I mean, that's a wonderful opportunity. Or even a QR code, here's how this product works, is another mm-hmm. example. You know, one technique that I've seen that was very successful was kind of a quiz. In this particular case, you know, through research, they found that their customers were very engaged with information. And so in this, once they scanned the QR code, it was a real short kind of a decision quiz that would help them come up with the product that was perfect for them. It really all depends on what does the customer want. Instead of just saying, oh, see us do a photo shoot, or, you know, watch us, aren't we great? You know,
making it
consumer focus rather than brand focus, it makes a huge difference.
That's a good thought in general, you know, QR codes and then other any marketing in general.
Right.
Okay, we did get a question, and it's actually a good one. Direct mail, as we all know, is a high price tag. It's a big issue in the marketing world today, we know. Are there any methods that you believe to be effective at lowering cost per acquisition costs once you've already done your research?
Well, hopefully that you already have a control piece, that you have a specific you know, cost per piece in the mail, and you know what the response rates. And the nice thing is, if you're an existing brand and you know what typical response rates you can have, then a head-to-head test would be a perfect way, you know, to see if you can raise the bar a bit. I think in every mailer, you should, again, always ask yourself, how can we do better? And so you asked about lowering, you know, believed to be effective at lowering the cost per acquisition. Well, if you can multi-purpose some of your pieces to where it's going to customers as well as prospects, but then, like I said earlier, if you can engage prospects, you know, if they're not ready to buy right away, and you can engage them at another level by asking for something. I saw another brand where it was a contest that they clicked onto, and then there was a winner on the back end. But again, they were able to collect more of those prospect names and then market to them later on. You know, another thing, too, that can really help the mail piece and your online efforts, we all want to get more email addresses because we know how cost-effective that can be. So if you have a call to action that gets them online, I would look really, really hard at the call to action for getting them to leave their email address. Instead of just saying sign up for, you know, offers and deals, which translates in the customer's mind as, oh, they're going to send me 100 emails a year. You instead, you know, can you offer them something else in exchange for their email address? And then again, once you have them, you can lower your cost per acquisition by targeting them, you know, through emails. So that's a great way the two can work together, the offline and the online. As far as, you know, lowering your other cost per acquisition, you just constantly have to tweak, you know, print costs and postage opportunities. Work really hard with your printer, you know, in finding ways to do that.
Mm-hmm. Great. Couple more questions. How many types of media touches should be used to reach a target audience? So the listener has stated, you know, start with direct mail, then go to direct website, email follow-ups. You know, are there any touches? How many touches do you think it takes? And I guess, you know, is it possible to have too many touches? I mean, you talk about that a little bit, but
yeah, you know, that's a loaded question. Obviously, you know, at the point where you have so many touches that it's not paying for itself, you've gone way too far, for sure. But ideally, you know, the fewer touches, the better. And if if the research is right, what Harvard Business Review research is saying is right, they don't want a bunch of stuff. They don't want a bunch of touch points. You know, give me information that is clear and concise, helps me make a decision, and then make it really easy for me, you know, to make a sale. And this is just a matter of testing. But you want to be able, at every touch point, give them a simple opportunity to close the deal right there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I've seen literally, you know, the whole concept of getting somebody on first base, you know, oftentimes for many consumers, you can get them to buy right away. But, you know, what's the quickest way to get them on first base? I think that's the holy grail that we're all looking for.
Definitely. That's true. Okay, we get this question sometimes. This is from a person that's interested in B2B, and he was wondering about using social media for selling a service, I guess, as opposed to a product. I think the question is, what's the best way to engage your following without having an actual product to sell them?
Sure, in the service
situation.
I'm not
sure if it's service actually. Yeah, I'm not sure if it's service. I mean, I guess he's asking, you know, if you don't have a product, how can you just engage them sort of with your brand? Yeah, maybe it is, you know, marketing service. I'm not sure. But
yeah. Well, the trick is, you know, you have to know the heart of your customer. And if their customers want more information or want to be a part of community, great. Then social makes sense. But maybe they don't. And that's the assumption that many people make, that, you know, oh, all brands want a community. Well, that's not necessarily so. You know, I look at Zappos, who, you know, they built a community through incredible customer service. They've got people that just love them. Why do they love them? Because they've made this incredible, simple, you know, they have a simple app. They have a simple way of ordering, a simple way. So even, I don't care if it's B2B or consumer, if the customers, what they want is what you give them. If, you know, in the case of BSW, who's a business-to-business, they have a lot of their target audience that do like to talk about the latest equipment. They like to talk about, you know, what's new in the industry. And so, therefore, they've learned that blogs are the way to connect. And so they do a lot of blogging, you know, to engage those customers and keep that brand top of mind. And at the end of the day, that's what we're really trying to do, is keep your brand top of mind in a very relevant way. So I'm sorry to hark back to research, but you can't research your customer enough. And in a B2B world, sometimes it's getting several of them around the table, or sometimes just a quick survey monkey, you know, constantly asking them questions and learning more about that. One of the best ways is just to listen in on a phone conversation, you know, to see what those barriers are and the kind of content that they really want. You know, that's what it's about, the right content to the right audience.
Okay, great. We have time for just one other question, there is a question here, and the listener was referring to the example that you were talking about, how many touch points you think it takes. You had mentioned, you know, offering to get it, you know, different ways to get an email address. I mean, what are some offers you could do to get an email address?
Well, again, you know, the call to action can make or break that program for you. But I've seen some great, you know, banner ads or ads that remarketing ads, whatever it is that you have on there. I'll give an example. One customer had like a before and after type visual image that was very intriguing, and they recognized that customers were very drawn to that. And it was something that was clicked onto a lot on their website. So they took that piece of information and infused it into some of their banner ads that showed up elsewhere, so that when they clicked through, you know, they saw that same imagery, and right next to that same imagery, you know, we'd have the call to action to get the email address. So if you pay attention to what they're already clicking on, the things that intrigue them online, take that information and use it elsewhere. You know, that same piece of information, again, the more you know about the customer, the better you can intrigue them. I also believe in being bold, being very bold. Stay true to your brand, but go out in a bold way and test bold things. You know, J.C. Penney, they certainly came out in a very bold way with their kind of rebranding, and it's failed them right now, but it certainly was bold and got attention, where other brands can be very bold and try new things, and they're very successful about it. The case of Duluth Trading, that was a very bold move, you know, to put on their cover, you know, just a specific product line. But it got people online, it got people engaged, and it was a very successful campaign. So, you know, just pay attention to what intrigues them. Go back to ICEE, I-C-E-E, what's intriguing, compelling, educational, and entertaining to your customer, and then craft that into that call to action and then use it everywhere.
Excellent. Great advice. Well, we're actually just about out of time. So on behalf of Target Marketing, Printing Impressions Magazine, I want to thank you all again for attending the session, for listening in, and obviously thanking Lois for a great presentation. If you're interested in discussing anything that you heard during this presentation, please visit the Networking Lounge to chat live with other session attendees, and also please visit the info booth and fill out our show survey to let us know about your experience today and let us know what sessions you liked and what anything you'd like us to improve upon. Lastly, don't forget to take a look at the agenda for the rest of the day. We have several wonderful sessions lined up, and we encourage you to view as many as you can. Remember, if you miss anything today, the on-demand environment will be available for 3 months starting Monday, August 20th. So have a great day, everybody.